Hello, ODAC fans, and welcome to the latest episode of the ODAC podcast. My name is JJ Nekloff, and I'm the Associate Commissioner of the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. As always, I'm joined by the Commissioner, Brad Bankston. Brad, how are you doing today?
Doing great, JJ. Excited about our podcast today and reflecting on the Hall of Fame inductees from Bridgewater College.
ODAC fans, we're recording this on Friday, January 9th, the first episode of the 2026 calendar year. And as Brad alluded to you today is Bridgewater Day. As we look at the Hall of Famers here from the Eagles athletics program, we know about Doc Jobson, who's got the ODAC Scholar Athlete of the Year on the male side named after him. Marge Berkeley has the Women's Award for that. But as did Hollins with some of their other people, being able to bring in three Hall of Famers in addition to Marge Berkeley. For Bridgewater, being a inaugural member of the conference, one of the charter members, they got four inductees, two men and two women, here in the first go-round. And we have a pair of interviews for you in this episode, one of them with former women's basketball head coach Gene Willie, as well as four-time letter winner in basketball, volleyball, and tennis with Melody Darrow. The two of them are our second interview today. Our first one, though, is with Mr. Jeff Jones, who happened to play with Dwayne Harrison, one of Bridgewater's male inductees on the football team. Dwayne was also a track and field athlete and really a 24-time ODAC champion, multi-All-American. And then their backs coach when they both played football together was Carlisle Whitelow, who was also a graduate of Bridgewater, competing in multiple sports as well, was a tennis coach also, and claim to fame for him and a legacy that is really truly interesting as the first black student athlete at the college, but then also the first graduate we heard, black student athlete, African-American student athlete at the college as well, but then also the first student athlete to compete in the state of Virginia. That was black, not at a predominantly black institution. So really an interesting legacy for him that we hear from Jeff, Brad, as we get ready to talk to Mr. Jones here with our first interview. So let's hear what he had to say.
Well, we're super happy to have with us, Jeff Jones, who is a Bridgewater graduate, 77 to 81. And, I guess had the unique opportunity to not only play with Dwayne Harrison, but to be coached by Carlisle Whitelow. And what we've learned in our previous conversations is that he also has a tie to Doc Jobson. So as JJ alluded to earlier in our pre-conference, you know, Jeff, I think you're, you know, one degree of separation from Jeff Jones in some way instead of Kevin Bacon. But we want to say welcome to you for joining us. Thank you for doing that. And I want to hop right in and just talk to you a little bit about kind of your impressions of Dwayne first, if you don't mind explaining a little bit about your history and how the two of you met, and then maybe your idea of him as a teammate and his contributions in that realm.
Sure. Dwayne and I both came in as freshmen I guess it was 77. He was a quarterback. Actually, my freshman year was strong safety, so I had to compete against him in practices there. But certainly, he's 6'4", you know, was 180 at the time. So he's certainly a big stature, and certainly playing quarterback, could have a nice view of the field. So I had to defend against his passing at freshman year. Sophomore year, we went to, I switched to quarterback. We needed a backup, so I, agreed to do backup. So we spent, more time together during that time in meetings and certainly in practice and whatnot. So, he's just... he's a positive guy. Always had a smile on his face, welcoming grin and how you doing to everyone, not on the team, but around campus too. So just, you know, you could see, you know, at that time, he's, you know, an excellent athlete. There, the skill sets, you know, the speed, certainly the arm strength, he could let it fly there in passing. So that was really early on.
You know, one of the things that's impressive to me of what he did there, you're talking about an all-around athlete, right? This guy is the quarterback, he's the punter, and I think in 79, I read that he led the country in average punting yardage of 41.9, and then on top of that, he's an All-America in track and field, and that's not unusual that, in, you know, at least at the Division III level, that you're going to have somebody that's going to cross over from track, I mean, from football to track or vice versa. But then he played a year of basketball. And I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that he had done that or not, but maybe talk about his versatility and just, I guess, the way other athletes viewed Dwayne when he was on campus during his time.
Yeah, well, so certainly we, you know, you looked up to the guy and just what he could do. Yeah, certainly thankful that he's at Bridgewater to help us along.
Not playing against him, that's right.
No doubt.
Exactly. And you're right. I believe his freshman year he did play basketball and then chose not to continue with that. And, you know, whether it's have a season off or you know, train during the winter. But, I mean, you could see if you've been around, you know, sports, you could see that he's just, you know, a little different than the rest of us. And certainly, you know, that showed on the field, on the track through his 4 years at BC.
You know, want to talk a little bit about the connection, if you will, between the two of you with one other individual, and that's Carlisle Whitelow, your backs coach, I think, when you guys were both playing for Bridgewater football there. You know, talk a little bit about him as a Hall of Famer here at Bridgewater and just what it was like playing for him. And this is obviously before he became, if he was the head coach at all there at Bridgewater, that sort of thing, kind of moving across. And you also, I think, didn't you play tennis for Coach Whitelow as well?
Yes. Coach Whitelow was our backs coach for football and was the head tennis coach. So, you know, had the good fortune to be coached by him, two sports, for 4 years each. You know, he, in football was, kind of disciplined in what we had to do. Never raised his voice, in anything, which is kind of unusual back in those days.
Right.
But you knew what was expected of you, you know, and he held you to that, that standard. You know, in the drills, you're going to pay attention. You're going to, you know, work the details and, you know, work to get it right. Tennis, you know, as the head coach, had more individual time, smaller team, obviously, but, It was the same. It was the same thing. You know, the expectations there from the discipline certainly stressed being a good sport, a gentleman on the court, play hard, and that's really what, you know, what he expected of us. There with that. So it was a good environment. You know, we had a good time with the tennis team, you know, with a smaller group that he let us joke around amongst ourselves. And I think really got a kick out of it. He'd have that smile and a little chuckle and, that's too much. You're too much.
Well, I mean, position coaches aren't supposed to be being smiling and chuckling at you. They're supposed to be hard on you there. So that's why it was interesting that you're talking about right. How, you know, didn't raise his voice, you know, that sort of thing. Was it one of those that he could also kind of show you by example, giving his athletic background and whatnot?
Yes. And in, and that's true. And he was in probably better shape than we were and than any of us as, you know, 19, 20 year olds, there, but, you know, in, all the times he never raised in all the time that I, was coached by him and certainly, became good friends and would visit with him every time I was down to camp. In any situation, as bad as it may be, you're down or don't perform, I'd never heard him raise his voice in the, probably 40 years that I knew him. But that's who he was. But at the same time, you knew the expectation. And for me, you didn't want to disappoint him. And, that's a good way to be, I think, in leading, kids at the time, leading men.
Yeah, no doubt.
Jeff, let's go back to Dwayne for a minute. You guys lived a legacy of being the 1980 ODAC football champions. And what of your mind what legacy did Dwayne leave at Bridgewater from an athletic perspective, from a personality and human perspective? And then talk a little bit about that group of guys that you played with in 80 and the memories that you have of that year, because I think you got a chance to be under center a little bit that season as well.
I did. In the last scrimmage before the season started, Dwayne broke a bone in his foot. So I didn't even see it happen during the scrimmage. And I said, Jones, you ready? So, it was an uncertainty, certainly, heading into the season there. We've lost our quarterback, our all-conference quarterback, and our punter, led the nation, I think, the year or two before in punting. So we had to fill those two voids. We were able to start off 2-0 before we lost the first game. During that time, Dwayne was still, he was able to be on the sidelines and certainly supportive to me and would tell me what, what he's seeing or things to look for. So, as a teammate, very supportive, positive, positive comments, conversations. So once he came back in the fourth game of the season, and he was healthy, came in after halftime. We were down at Newport News, and he came back in and did fine.
back to his old ways. Yeah,
so, right. And then the next week we played Guilford, who was not in the conference at that time. I think they gave some scholarships. I don't know if it was NAIA or what the what the classification was. But then we started the rest of the ODAC schedule, close games, 15-14 win over Emory, and then 21-20 at home against W&L, and then 27-25. So, he played well, and actually with just those four was all conference that year as well, having only played three conference games.
That shows his quality, that sort of thing. But kudos to you for getting a couple wins in there as well.
And exactly, yeah.
I think I mentioned this to Brad yesterday.
Sell yourself short there.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this to Brad yesterday. I was kind of curious the relationship between the two of you there, which you hit right away that, when he was out, he still kind of talked to you and, made sure you were seeing what he was seeing and kind of helped you out there. Cause we hear so much about that in the NFL world now about some of these older guys who don't think they need to pass it forward to some of the younger guys, that sort of thing when they're coming up. And obviously there's money involved and things like that, but it's kind of cool to hear that. I'm curious also that, between the two of you, what was your styles of play? Did your play style differ from his a little bit?
Were you as fleet of foot? Yeah. Were you as fleet of foot as he was? That's a big question. Yeah.
I was probably, over a half a second slower in the 40. And, Dwayne could run and throw. Say he had those at 6'4", he had those long legs that when he got going, you know, he could move. You know, I guess I was better at the run game and handing off to our tailback often, which worked well. But you know, I had being in the same class. You know, I had no qualms with I had no I had no delusion that I should have been starting after he was
gotcha.
Well, put it that way.
Well, still, just like anybody, just like they talk now, nowadays, next man up, you were there and you were ready to go. Right. And I think that's all about the legacy of that program, that team, that year. And I think the contributions of both of you are in the results. So that's that's really cool. And when we're talking about legacy, I want to go back to Coach Whitelow a little bit here. Talk about the legacy of a unique individual with Coach Whitelow, being that, you know, he lettered when he was at Bridgewater in three sports. I think one of the interesting points, though, is he was the first Black athlete to participate in intercollegiate athletics at Bridgewater and the first one in the state that was not at a traditional Black institution. You know, talk a little bit about his legacy and some of those things that come across from that aspect, not just the athlete, but the humanitarian side.
You know, I think with that and to piggyback on what you just said, if I'm not mistaken, he was the first African American to go 4 years and graduate from Bridgewater.
Well,
fantastic. So you know, so with all that and the you know, the atmosphere of the country and the college sports, I think, you know, perhaps that's why he had the humility that he did. And, you know, that the way he treated, you know, his fellow human throughout his life, you know, is unparalleled. I mean, if you want a model of how to be a good human, that's Coach Whitelow. You know, through the years post graduation, if I would call and get his answering machine, that, you know, when I finally get a hold of him, you know, he's been at the retirement home visiting or someone in the hospital, or, you know, it was always serving others there, which there is an award given at Bridgewater for humanitarian work in the Whitelow name. So, you know, and he walked that walk every day. In you know, with everyone, I said that just that kind of the calm poise, never raised his voice, just treated people you know, well, and I guess that, you know, ultimately how he would want to be treated where he wasn't, you know, at a point in time in the history.
Well, not only that, but to do it for a long time as well. I mean, the notes we've got is that he returned to Bridgewater in 1969. So basically doing that for 28 years before he retired in 1997, like you talked about, getting the Raritan Club Citizen of the Year Award. I mean, it goes to show more about, you know, the man than it is, you know, the coach or the player, that sort of thing, kind of putting it all together.
Right.
You know, what are your impressions on him from that aspect of it?
And, you know, and that's really, you know, I think, you know, his legacy from that is not, you know, the coaching or, you know, any of those type accomplishments, but just, you know, when you think of Coach Whitelow, and I think anybody that had ever met him, you know, that would be the impression of just how he treated you. And, you know, he made you feel good. You know, I'd call on his birthday or you know, any events, and, you know, of course he'd be thrilled to hear, but, you know, he made you feel good about calling, and always, and this I've heard from other people as well, he would always handwrite a thank you card for anything that was done. I still have them in, you know, in my files that I've kept through the years, but just to you know, make anybody else's life better. There was an article too. He was out one morning. He lived right there in downtown Bridgewater. that he happened to be out, and he waved. He knew the bus driver, the school bus driver, and waved. Uh-huh. And the bus driver had talked to him later and said, you know, I was having a bad day there, wasn't feeling particularly good, but when you waved and the smile, that made my day. So, you know, Coach heard that. So what does he do? Every morning, he would stand out on the corner and wave to folks going by, just with the big old smile to give them a good start to the day, I guess. And that was Coach.
Jeff, first of all, I want to say thank you for taking time out and joining us and talking about Dwayne and Coach Whitelow and your memories. I think the thing that sticks with me and how much I've enjoyed this Hall of Fame journey that we're on in 50 years of the ODAC is having a chance to call attention to the individuals that the foundation of this league and our institutions mm-hmm. and our athletic department, they rest on their shoulders. They really do. And such a nice tribute today for you to say the words that you've said about both Dwayne and Carlisle. And it just makes a huge impression on me. And I want to say thank mm-hmm. you and offer you the opportunity. If there's anything you want to say in closing about those guys or your experience at Bridgewater, I would certainly welcome you to do that.
Well, it's been a pleasure to join you. With Dwayne, certainly he's got to be maybe in the top five athletes at Bridgewater, I would think. And I've, seen some recently that the whole landscape's changed in the training and all that, but he's got to be in the top at Bridgewater. I'm not sure if he still holds records, but, with Dwayne, beyond, again, you go to the person beyond on what they've accomplished on the athletic field. Dwayne was a friend to everybody. He had that big old smile and he'd put his arm around, how you doing? And he would listen, he genuinely was interested in how you were doing. So that, and, for Coach, really same way. He wanted you to act and behave well, be good people. And say he, as we've discussed, he walked that every day of his life, and certainly took pride in the successes of his players and students beyond. So, both of them, I know, certainly are held in high regard by anybody that knew them.
I'm not sure what would happen if I stood in my neighborhood and just waved at people going by in front of my house. But you know what? I may try to start adding that to my list. Maybe day I'd make somebody's day the way that he did. So
there you go.
Really appreciate your time.
All right. My pleasure.
Well, JJ, again, amazing to hear Jeff's stories about Carlisle and Dwayne and just the memories, I guess, of flooding back for him, having had side conversations with him setting that up. I'll go back to what I said at the end of that interview. It's just such an honor to be able to recognize these individuals from the conference perspective, knowing that they're the institutional selections for something as, in my mind, as prestigious as the Conference Hall of Fame. And what a great year to do it in our 50th anniversary.
Well, and I think we've said this before, and I'll say it again. I mean, it's the stories are the interesting piece to me, we can read notes about awards and titles they've won and coaching records and other stats and whatnot. But hearing the stories from the people, whether we do this here in the podcast realm, or we're able to record something with video, or if down the road, we simply have to do something with the written word because we can't bring somebody on that we necessarily want to talk about or have as an association. But the stories are where it is, what's behind somebody's 112-24 overall record. What did they do? Something like that. Or like we heard from Jeff talking about his contribution to that team that won the ODAC title, getting out there, winning a couple games and being a different quarterback than Dwayne Harrison, but having the help of Dwayne having the help of a position coach like Coach Whitelow. I mean, it's really those cool things that are part of it, to hear about the relationships that they have and different things, and to learn just in conversation, like for 2 minutes before we talked to Jeff, that he had an association with Doc Jobson, you know, as the science coach that they had a class together. So, I can't remember the name of the class that Jeff said that he had with him.
Origin like of Anatomy or something like that.
Yeah, something. And it's one that went over my head because, you know, I can be a math guy, but I'm definitely not a science guy in that sense. But I think that's pretty cool. And I know that we're in line for some more good stories here with our next interview with Gene Willie and Melody Darrow.
Yeah, again, I can't remember because it was before my time, Melody's career, but it sounds like it was, you know, astonishing for what she did at Bridgewater. So I look forward to hearing from her and, you know, asking Gene to reflect on somebody that was as impactful as Laura Mapp was and continues to be. You know, Coach Mapp is still in the Bridgewater area. But asking Gene to kind of lean in on someone who, you know, had a 37-year legacy as a coach, professor, and mentor with women's basketball. She coached field hockey. She played field hockey, basketball, and tennis at the University of Richmond, you know, and guided Bridgewater in a lot of different areas over her time. Probably, and I know that we've had some accomplishments recently in the recent past, one of the winningest coaches, certainly in the history of the ODAC. So looking forward to hearing Gene's perspective. And of course you have Melody, who not only played under Gene as an assistant coach when Gene was an assistant coach, but played under Coach Mapp, during her time as the basketball coach. So let's lean in and hear what both of them had to say about this wonderful journey at Bridgewater.
Pleased to be joined by two more of our Bridgewater Eagles here today. We have with us former women's basketball head coach Gene Willie, and we have with us three sports star, 12-time letter winner Melody Darrow, one of the Hall of Fame inductees from Bridgewater, along with head coach Laura Mapp, and then Dwayne Harrison and Carlisle Whitelow, who we heard from earlier today in an interview with Jeff Jones. Gene and Melody, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Doing well. Thank you.
Very cool. So we'll hop right into this here, kind of talking about this a little bit. And Melody, I want to start with you. Just, you know, the process of going through and looking at playing three sports and not just playing them, but excelling. I mean, 12-time letter winner, multiple all-conference award winners. When you were going through your process of a school to choose, did that go into your recruiting decision-making process about going to a place that you thought you could play all those places or play all those sports, I should say, and then give us your experience of going through that in your collegiate life?
Well, it definitely did play a huge role. Was a key factor, of course, that I could continue to play the sports that I enjoyed and loved, because I would have missed them if I didn't get to play one of those. That was one key factor. Another key factor, several key factors are the coaches. They were just wonderful with reaching out and communicating and following me during high school and the years. And another key factor is my family, really, because it kind of all starts with, I think, my sister, who is a grad of 78 and played for Coach Mapp as well.
Wow.
And actually, her high school coach was Nancy Baller Mosier, who was also a player of Coach Mapp's. And there were several of my sister's classmates, several of those who are in the Hall of Fame at Bridgewater College. They had a great experience under Coach Baller at the time. And so my sister went to her name is Susan Darrow. Everybody knows her by Sugar because that's her college nickname. That's great, isn't it? So they played under Coach Mapp. She played under Coach Mapp and actually field hockey and basketball and tennis. So that was a familiar place for me because I used to kind of go and I won't say I went to the games to watch the games because my sister's a little bit older than I am. But I went to the games and I enjoyed being there to play on the court during halftime. And then I would try to play around in the back there. They had actually had a trampoline out that we used to bounce. I used to bounce around on during the game. So I wasn't, you know, I was familiar with Bridgewater College. I've always been a small town girl. Broadway is a small town, and Bridgewater was, and I did visit other schools in the ODAC, but I think what really drew me to, in addition to my sister being there and Coach Mapp having the experience of her just being so respected and just a great coach and person, is, you know, just Coach Willie and Coach Mapp and reaching out to me through letters. I still have some of those letters, Coach Willie, and I love to go back through and look at them. And it's when, you know, you didn't have to do the texting. You could actually write real letters and snail mail and all that stuff. So it was definitely a draw that I felt like I could belong to that and be a part of a program and make an impact. Being able to play those three sports, though, that was really special. It's just not something you can do these days anymore, but I enjoyed all three. Yeah, and I had Coach Mapp for basketball, of course, and tennis.
Yeah, I was gonna say my resume for you was a little bit incomplete there with what sports those were. So three-time all-conference first team in basketball. I think the first one to do that, a three-time all-conference first teamer. So that was pretty cool. And then all-conference in volleyball, and then a number one singles player in tennis. I mean, I know you said you just said you enjoyed them all, but which of those is your favorite?
Oh, it's got to be basketball. Yeah, it's got to be basketball. Now, I didn't start playing volleyball until I was in eighth grade. And then, you know, my sister and my dad really kind of taught me the skills of basketball first and tennis. My sister taught me tennis, and I just, you know, there was more opportunities to play basketball, and I guess I was better at it, so I liked it.
There you go. That's a good reason.
I'd say you were pretty good at it. To end up in a situation where you're one of the first selected people in the ODAC Hall of Fame, you made quite an impression, obviously, in your time at Bridgewater. I'm going to lean in with Gene a little bit. Gene, I'm not going to ask you to embarrass Melody, but why don't you give us a little bit of your impression of her as a player, obviously as an assistant coach with the program, and ultimately the fact that she had success in three sports. I mean, that to me says a lot about your inner drive as much as it does your external abilities, but you got to be pretty darn good to be able to do that. So Gene, why don't you lean in on that a little bit?
Yeah. I knew in recruiting Melody, and of course Coach Mapp, you know, we knew Melody from time when Susan was, you know, at Bridgewater, and you know, Melody was a program changer. The drive, the competitive nature, Melody, a little bit of a perfectionist, probably, fair to say, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, but that's what you need, is somebody who is willing to do things and do them right the first time. And Melody was 100% all the time. You rarely saw a difference in her practice and her game speed, because Melody only knew one speed. And so when it came time for the games, she was already at that level. It wasn't a matter of having to push her. It wasn't encouraging, having to ride her, saying, Mella, we need you to play a little harder. Never, never did we need to do that. And, you know, I think I was just going back and looking at the career records in the Bridgewater women's basketball, and she's, you know, the number two all-time scorer in basketball. Mm-hmm. She's number seven in assists, which tells you something.
Yeah.
She liked to share the ball, which isn't always going to happen when you're the all-time.
That's what I was thinking. You're the second scorer. You're not going to pass it.
She's not going to pass it, but our Melody passed it. And, and then defensively, she's number four on the list in steals. I mean, very rarely do you get that package of player, and off the court was a solid, solid, exceptional student. So when you talk about being the total package, Melody was the total package. No question.
Well, it took somebody to be able to find that. And I know you're going to take claim to that, but we can't take that away from Coach Mapp. Coach Mapp knew, right? She had to know. Yeah.
She knew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So when you're coaching with Coach Mapp, you're playing, you know, talk a little bit about Coach Mapp. I mean, she's one of the icons in the ODAC, in my opinion. She's a pillar. If there's a Mount Rushmore of women's influences in the ODAC, Laura Mapp's on it. And lean in a little bit about her, and then I know JJ's will follow up with Melody about that.
Is that for me or Melody?
For you.
For me, yeah. You know, I think Coach Mapp, just the presence that she brought. It's the quiet presence. It wasn't, you know, loud, boisterous. It was very humble, very grounded. And that's just who Miss Mapp is. And, you know, to this day, if anybody goes to visit her, it's that same kind of groundness, connectiveness, can tell you who graduated and what year and where they played and what the family is doing. And I think it was just that connection with the players, both on and off the court, that really made her so special in what she did. Melody, your thoughts?
Oh, you know what? I was going to say the exact same thing. I mean, she was reserved. But she did have a huge presence, a little stoic at times, but she could communicate and you knew what you needed to do. You know, she could communicate with words or, you know, and not loud, like you said, reserved and quiet. She could communicate with her little pinky. And I think that her players and the referees also knew what the little pinky meant, you know, like shaking that, like, come on now. And so you respected that, first of all, and that it's an unbelievable ability to know and remember the details of each team and each player. Like you said, like, she's going to know not only you, but she's going to know about, you know, your life, you know, your career, your family, and just shows that interest and, you know, just that friendship and mentoring, that support that you feel known, you feel appreciated and connected. Like you said, yes, I agree totally.
I'd add one thing to that, that the thing that stands out to me is that we're talking about two, you know, coaches that made huge influences in Coach Whitelow and Coach Mapp. Mm-hmm. And you know what the common trait is? They seem like they're a lot alike.
Very similar.
Yes.
I mean, they really do. They really do. So maybe it's something in the water up there. I don't know what it is, but somebody did something right.
I think an area I kind of want to go with this a little bit here, it's in the vein of the same conversation as both of you. If I'm looking at the years that you were around, looking at Coach Mapp's record here, won a lot of games. I mean, combined close to maybe over 150 games of your 4-year tenures as players at Bridgewater. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Coach Mapp's ability to reach student athletes. You know, Melody, why don't you hit that one first, and then Coach Willie, in your sense, not only reach you as a student athlete, but then help shape you when you were going on to become a coach. And become a highly successful coach, winning all the games that you won. I mean, there's a reason why you have that email address, right?
That's just because I couldn't tell you. People ask how many I win. I'm like, I don't know. And finally, I was like, I got to come up with something so I don't look stupid when people ask me how many games I've won. So that's why I have that. Mella, you can go first on that.
Well, I can say, you know, with the development of the student athlete, you know, I think it comes about with the recruiting as well. Because it was those types of people that you attracted and that you wanted to be like people, as in, I mean, student athletes. You know, at Bridgewater College, you were student first. And that was known. I mean, we had individual meetings with our coaches. You know, you and Coach Mapp would, and Coach Eichmann too, who is another one of Coach Mapp's players. You know, we had meetings and check-ins and goal setting, you know, like that's huge. And so you have somebody else who is, you're accountable to, you know, like, so we were accountable to our coaches, but we were accountable to ourselves, of course, but also our teammates. And so it was all of that that made you want to work even harder, knew that you had to support behind you, whatever resources or help that they could provide, they were right there. You know, like on a daily, if you, you know, I think Coach Mapp and Coach Willick could sense if you're having an off day and could, you know, right away just, you know, come over and strike up a conversation or just kind of be there with you if you didn't want to talk. So, I mean, I do think it comes back to that connectedness and knowing your players and having an individual sessions with them and goal setting and the expectations that we're working together as a team, but you're also working to improve yourself, both on the court and off the court.
Yep. Jean, your thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing, and I think Melody would understand what I'm saying here, but I think with Coach Mapp, she was just somebody you didn't want to disappoint.
Oh, yes.
That you felt worse about yourself if you knew that she was disappointed.
Disappointed.
I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And I'm sure there were plenty of times, unfortunately, where I probably disappointed at times because, you know, I was a young college student and I always told my players, not my first rodeo. I've been there. I've done it. You know, you're not doing anything probably I didn't do. But when I look back at what I did, but it was just really not wanting to be like the weak link in things. And you knew she entrusted you to do what was right on the court, off the court, in the classroom. And you just wanted her to be proud of you, performance-wise, academically, you know, socially, not being on the list from the dean's office on Monday morning. you know.
So true, yes.
I mean, and I do think... you know, I when I then took over, I did know that things were going to happen and what would be the best way as a head coach to then deal with them, trying to be somewhat similar to how Miss Mapp was with it was just a talk and, you know, I'm disappointed. And what can we do now? It's over. It's forgotten. Let's move on. Now, Melody never got in trouble, so she probably never had those talks that I had with Coach Mapp.
That likely just means you guys weren't good enough at catching people. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, I do want to say, I know and Melody was talking about recruiting, and I do remember it came down, I believe it was between us and one other school. Down the road in the conference. And I'm not sure I slept a wink the weekend I knew that Melody had gone to do an overnight. And when we found out that she was going to be a Bridgewater Eagle, honest to God, it was probably one of the happiest days of my Bridgewater career. And I kid you.
Oh, wow.
I kid you not.
Man, yeah. I needed to see her play. Good gracious. She was so sweet.
The girl... is a baller. She's a baller. She's a baller.
Nice. Yep.
I just tell people now I never met a shot I didn't like. So, you know.
Nice.
Take them. Eventually they'll go in, right? Yeah. You gotta take
yeah, exactly. It's going to happen sometime.
Yeah.
Jean, let's reflect back on kind of women's athletics at Bridgewater. You know, again, I mentioned Coach Mapp kind of being on the Mount Rushmore of ODAC and, you know, as women's athletics grew. And I said this earlier, and JJ, when we talk about our middle segment, she's probably one of the winningest coaches in the history of the league, you know, with basketball and field hockey combined. Right. God knows what she did in tennis, following tennis. Right. Yeah. Right. So an amazing number. Mm-hmm. Talk about the evolution of women's athletics in Bridgewater and what you've seen. You probably are as good a person to speak to that as any. It's been a cool thing, hasn't it?
Well, it has. And you've been along for the ride.
I have.
And I thought about that today. I'm like, you know, Brad has seen so many changes. And JJ, you're 20 years with the conference.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen the changes. And I was fortunate enough, I actually was having lunch today with Coach Heisman, Mary Frances.
Yes.
And, you know, I was kind of telling her some of the areas we were, you know, going to be talking about and about the change in the women's, you know, athletics there. And I think this is across the board. This was across the board. That initially women were hired to teach, and then, oh, by the way, can you coach? You know, and then it's like, well, since you're female, maybe you can help with the cheerleaders. Or, you know, and you're going to get the 8 o'clock classes to teach every day. So they were teaching 9 to 12 hours a week, academic classes. They were then coaching. They were trying to recruit, which in that day, far different, but like Melody said, handwritten notes, that takes time. And then they're driving the vans to games. They're driving the vans home from games. They're probably doing the laundry, and then they're back in the classroom. And now, as it should be because of everything that is involved, coaches are hired to coach. They may have secondary duty, but recruiting is now a full-time job, 12 months. Mm-hmm. And you have to retain your roster. You have to probably re-recruit your roster. You know, it is, I mean, certainly it is not in the realm of Division I, but I think any coach these days, even just in the time I have been away from Bridgewater, it has changed tremendously. And, you know, I just think coaches are finally able to coach, not trying to be the man juggling six plates, and you walk into practice and you've come out of three administrative meetings and you're not even sure what day of the week it is or who you're playing next. And I think, you know, as you've seen, Brad and JJ, there's just so many more layers to things now. And so I'm glad that the women that are getting hired, and even the men that are getting hired, they're getting hired with the opportunity to be really successful.
Yeah, fair.
And I think that's key, and I think it's integral to athletics in general. I think it helps build, and you go through that through, you know, simple things like time management to how to multitask, how to do that.
Right.
You know, and Melody, you did that to the, let's use the 90s term, to the max with your three sports, competing them very well and graduating and going on to better things. And I think that's where I'll segue to here as we get close to wrapping up here is, you know, talk about what's been next for you after Bridgewater, after your experiences at Bridgewater, positive. You know, what have you done since that time?
Because of my, I guess, career and participation in sports at Bridgewater, I was able to earn an academic scholarship. So instead of going right into the workforce, I had time to go to get my master's. And that took me to James Madison University, mm-hmm. where I got my MBA. Hit a little bit of a aha moment when I'm thinking, do I really want to be in the corporate world? You know, I was, the classes were very different. They were all night classes, and I was in there with a bunch of older, I'm going to say older than me people who were sent there, you know, from their business, and they're taking classes to, you know, go right back in to apply into the business world. So I was a little bit of an outliner on that end, but it made me start to think, what I could do. And I was actually substituting teaching at that time. So I was fortunate enough that JMU had a business education department then. So I was working on my master's and business education certification at the same time. So I was able to do that. And actually I started coaching some when I was substituting. So that got me thinking maybe I can use my business degree for teaching as well. And, you know, wanting to have a family someday, and that school life fit right in when my girls were born and I was able to, I did stop coaching then, but I had, you know, the girls to help, and that kept me pretty busy. So ended up having, after getting my master's, going back in and teaching with another great Bridgewater, for another great Bridgewater graduate who's in the Delmer Bakken, who's also in the Hall of Fame, went to Stanton State Public Schools and taught. And then there was an opening at Broadway High School. So I actually went back to my alma mater and was able to teach there for a number of years until I moved to Maryland. And it's been in education still. So I've been in business education, technology education, and now I'm doing work-based learning, which is I help students connect with internships and apprenticeships. So I'm really enjoying still being a part of that school environment and helping and mentoring other students and helping them connect with the businesses and, you know, the college and career readiness that they need. It keeps you young, and it's very exciting. It's not a lot of the same stuff every day. I think Coach Willie could attest to that. But it's been marvelous. It's been wonderful. And it all started at Bridgewater. And, you know, that has to do with, you know, also the relationships that you built, that if you ever needed a recommendation or support, you had it. And you could, you know, even the teammates that I have, keep in touch with them. They're good friends. And so it's priceless, all that my time at Bridgewater has given me so many more gifts than I have given and received. So it's been wonderful.
Melody, I want to say congratulations, right? And for making the top 50 recognition this year for the ODAC Hall of Fame. That's nothing short of an astonishing accomplishment, and congratulations to you for that. And Gene, just really appreciate you leaning in and sure. talking Thank about you. Our honoree here who's with us, but also having the opportunity to elaborate on Coach Mapp and the influence that she had, not only on you, but on Melody and all the other student athletes that she touched along the way. And again, thank both of you, and look forward to continuing the celebration as we go throughout the rest of the academic year.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. It's been great. It's been fun.
You know, Brad, it's a great day to be an Eagle today here for the ODAC podcast. It was, you know, great to talk earlier with Jeff about Dwayne and Carlisle. But this one was, I think, for me, just because I know Gene Willie, it was a nice one just for me to hear that perspective from her, because she was, you know, part of the first 10 years of my career here in the ODAC to hear that. So I enjoyed them all here, but really enjoyed talking with Gene Willie coming across. And Melody, just, you know, three sports, 12 letter winners, multiple ODAC award winner in multiple sports. It just impressive what the stories are that we're hearing from these individuals that are in our first Hall of Fame class.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of being here and working with Coach Mapp. Never saw Melody play, and mentioned that to her in the interview. Met Carlisle multiple times and had the opportunity to spend time with him on occasion. Unfortunately, never had a chance to cross paths with Dwayne and the quality performer that he was. And it sounds like the guy that brought people together, based on Jeff's description of how he handled himself on campus and within the team structure. So again, you're right. Kudos to all those that have been selected from Bridgewater. Really looking forward to our celebration on campus on the 17th of January when all family members and others are coming back and having an opportunity to honor these individuals, not only with a reception, but during one of the basketball games on that afternoon. So that's going to be kind of fun to be able to get back and remember them appropriately.
Well, I mean, you mentioned, you know, that you didn't get to see Melody play because you guys are roughly the same age. I won't tell you how old I was when that was gone. We can leave that alone. I certainly didn't say that on the call. Looking ahead to, you know, what we've got here in the ODAC here for future shows and ideas, we'll continue to talk to our Hall of Famers here, both in this format and in some video formats, get it together. But next week coming up for all of Division III and really all the NCAA, I should say, is we're in D.C. at the NCAA convention. Lots of proposals on the table. Maybe we'll hop on and give our people a bit of a recap of some of the things that might happen from the business session. Maybe there's something we can do with that as part of another ODAC podcast. But just know that we've got that coming down the road. You've got your winter sports, which are going to be back in full swing, really starting this weekend. They're getting moving here. Men's and women's basketball has continued to go, but track and field is back in action. Swimming is back in action. Wrestling continues with several schools competing in different formats and in different tournaments. And then the second season of ODAC men's volleyball starts this weekend as well. Actually probably starts today on this Friday with Roanoke competing and Randolph and Shenandoah are getting going on, and Shenandoah being a new program joining Bridgewater, bringing our men's volleyball ranks to 17. So really an exciting time here as we get going. And then we get to that, as we've alluded to in on several podcasts, the crossover season coming in mid to late February, when baseball, softball, men's and women's lacrosse, men's and women's tennis in earnest, outdoor track and field, and men's and women's golf get moving on. Lots of things happening there, and it's just it's an exciting time, and I like it that we're able to include these stories to look back while still seeing the great competition we've got there out there on the our respective athletic arenas, Brad.
Yeah, again, we've had a great start to the 25-26 academic year with the fall, and as we're transitioning here in the winter and moving towards the start of spring practice, you know, a lot of energy and a lot of good opportunity to kind of recharge your batteries. There's a little bit of a break in that holiday season following New Year's, and I know our teams are raring and ready to go, and we'll have a tremendous basketball tournament. I know that you know, throughout January and February, we're going to have some great competition in basketball. Look forward to watching how that shakes out. We've got indoor track championship coming up at Roanoke College that last weekend in February, the 1st of March. And we've got swimming. And, you know, we had a planning call today as we're gearing up for our annual trek to the Greensboro Aquatic Center that second weekend in February. So we'll celebrate our men's and women's swimming champions there. So, you know, wrestling is ongoing as well. We're going to have wrestling ending approximately the same time as swimming, and we're in the dual season of that. And I know that was one thing that we want to get together soon, JJ, and have a podcast highlighting kind of where we are in the wrestling world. So we look forward to getting back to you and those ODAC fans out there with more commentary about things that are going on in the league as we wrap up the NCAA convention this weekend.
Yep. Looking forward to it. I think another thing we'll do is, not a podcast update, but a Commissioner's Cup update, because we haven't done that yet from the fall season, so we'll do that. But lots of things coming down the table. We look forward to bringing you some more ODAC stories in action here on the ODAC Podcast.